Well, hello everyone. It is the third in our series of Arguments for Monarchy by Great Thinkers of the Past. Today we're going to be looking at Joseph de Maistre, who very much built on the arguments of Robert Filmer and Thomas Hobbes, who we looked at in the previous two days. There's going to be some overlap here, but I would argue that de Maistre really kind of finalized the classic form of the pro-absolute monarchy arguments and became arguably the kind of foremost champion of throne and altar. Before we get going, I'm just going to take a little sip of my tea here. Incidentally, you can actually get one of these mugs. They're available in black, and they're only available in black now. But yeah, if you want an academic agent mug, you can buy it now. Speaking of which, I do still sell courses here at the academic agency. The bestseller is the Trivium. Many other great courses available. Foundations of Politics, Foundations of Economics, Foundations of Shakespeare. You can get them all in one fantastic package called the Ultra Bundle, which will save yourself a whole bundle of cash if you buy them all together. Buy it now. But let's get back to the lecture at hand, which is de Maistre. So his first big idea really is that authority is foundational and not derivative. Legitimate authority arises from a primordial fact of social existence itself prior to any contract, vote, or rational justification. Every attempt to ground sovereignty in popular will ultimately undermines the very possibility of a stable order. For de Maistre, theories of social contract, consent, and so on dissolve authority rather than explain it. And indeed, much like Robert Filmer, de Maistre is saying, like, this is just an empirical fact of human existence, basically, that, you know, authority, it just is, and it arrives, it kind of establishes itself naturally and organically, often, in fact, almost always in the form of monarchy or kingship, not as these arbitrary abstract forms that have been come up with a priori. So, yeah, very much like Robert Filmer in this regard. Second, the irrational core of political founding. Constitutions and political orders are never purely rational constructions. Nobody sat down and planned France, for example. It just kind of happened. Same with Britain, same with most countries ever, save perhaps the good old United States of America. More on that in a second. They rest on non-rational foundations. Reverence, sacrifice, mystery, shared belief, which reason alone cannot generate or fully justify. A lot of things don't have a reason. A lot of things are, well, this is just, it just is. A lot of the things that people believe don't have a fully thought out reason. It's just because this is what we think and have always thought of. And the non-rational core of this may upset intellectuals who think that societies can be planned, you know, in a book like this. But this is an aspect of human nature and an aspect of reality that one has to accept. The pretense that a polity may be designed like a machine is, for de Maistre, the characteristic error of modern philosophy. And, of course, history is filled with a litany of failed political experiments, including the former Soviet Union, including, I would argue, the United States of America, which, whatever the original intentions of the founders were, has, well, hardly turned out to be a kind of banner for the ideals that they espouse. become a basket case and a disaster in many ways, a disaster which has been exported back to the old country, back to Europe now, as we've been seeing, although there was some give and take. The French, with their revolution, played a large role, as De Maistre himself would tell you. And that has also been, the French Revolution and its consequences have been a disaster for the human race. De Maistre would surely agree. But anyway, let us continue. He says, sovereignty must be absolute in principle. Now, this is a common theme. We touched on it all those weeks back when I did the lecture on Carl Schmitt. We looked at it yesterday when we looked at Thomas Hobbes, and Robert Filmer also made these arguments. Whenever, wherever sovereignty exists, it is absolute. The only question is who holds it, since it admits of no limits. The Constitution and things like the checks and balances that are built into the American kind of order really is a kind of cope. It's an illusion. Written constitutions and divisions of power merely obscure the location of the final decision, leaving the actual power principle intact. It's just a kind of mask. And every crisis reveals the truth. Somewhere, someone must decide without appeal, without anybody else to override it. Somebody makes a decision. And that moment in the crisis exposes who is the real sovereign. Now, if this sounds very familiar to you, friends, fans of Carl Schmitt, it is because Carl Schmitt was indeed a fan of Joseph de Maistre. And there is an argument to say that Schmitt is, I wouldn't say merely, but there's an argument to say that Schmitt is secularized, modernized de Maistre. De Maistre does come packaged with a core set of ideals, monarchy being one of them, his Christian faith being another one, the throne and the altar. But these things and the basic logic of it more or less is the same in Carl Schmitt, I would say. You know, there's more to be written on that topic, but I think you can draw basically a straight line from de Maistre to Schmitt if you want to understand the intellectual heritage. One of de Maistre's great contributions to political philosophy is his critique of the Enlightenment. De Maistre is one of the great counter-Enlightenment thinkers, along with Vico and a few other people, Dieter Hamann and a few others that I would put in that canon of counter-Enlightenment thinkers. He says that the spirit of the 18th century, its confidence in reason, rationalism, individual rights, and written constitutions dissolved the traditional sources of obedience and reverence on which all order ultimately depends. The French Revolution was the logical outcome of this era and the predictable consequence of that dissolution. And I often wonder if some of these great thinkers of the past could come back and see, you know, the modern day. What if de Maistre could take a stroll around Paris in 2026 at the time of recording and take a little look at what has happened to his beloved country? Would he be surprised? I don't think he would. I think de Maistre would say, well, I told you guys, this is basically what happens when you are hubristic enough to believe that you can just come up with a priori, a set of abstract principles, and run society along those lines. Human beings don't conform to abstract principles, and more importantly, power does not actually conform to abstract principles. And as I so often quote Shakespeare, hark what discord follows. Because if you understand what De Maistre is saying, you have strayed from the true path of how things really are, of what human reality really is. And you've tried to impose on it this fiction, basically things made up by Jean-Jacques Rousseau, or by Karl Marx, or by John Stuart Mill, and various other liberals in the past. I wouldn't actually include the founders of America in that. America, I've given a bit of kind of a stick in this video, but the founders were smart cookies, and they actually understood a lot of this stuff. They actually were more sympathetic to counter Enlightenment ideas than one may imagine. But that is a topic for a different video, really. I would say that there were definitely Enlightenment strains in and around the founding fathers. The Jeffersonian strain, I think. You know, the more radical, egalitarian strain. And this, you could argue, is the original sin of America. But anyway, let us continue. De Maistre says that violence and sacrifice are necessary in the foundation of any order. Political order is everywhere and always born in violence, in sacrifice, and in the shedding of blood. Ultimately, all power, all governments represent the monopoly on force, the monopoly on violence. Constitutions that pretend otherwise are living on the inherited capital of earlier and more ruthlessly honest foundations. Every nation has the government it deserves. Amazing line from De Maistre, which I have quoted often on this channel. Every nation has the government it deserves. Now, democracy pretends that power is something else, that we all voluntarily elect this government or elect that government, and they rule over us on our say-so, that the government are kind of public servants doing us a favour, rather than they are the ones with the monopoly on violence, and therefore they're the ones in charge. So De Maistre is really saying the older order was just more honest about itself. Ultimately, the guy who at the top is the one who's outmaneuvered all his rivals, the one who has managed to secure the monopoly on violence. And there it is. So if we come back to the modern day, Vladimir Putin is more honest, right, than the British Parliament, or Vladimir Putin is more honest than the American Congress. And one could argue that greater corruption exists in both of those democratic bodies than in the more autocratic Putin. I'm not saying there's no corruption in Russia, obviously. I'm just saying that it's just more honest about itself. The system is more honest about itself. You know, if you could, the rivals of Putin have a habit of ending up in body bags, is what I'm saying. But nobody's in any doubt as to who's in charge there. And I'll come back to what I've been saying in recent lectures. Is Andy Burnham really in charge? Is Donald Trump really in charge? Well, you tell me. Do you think the buck finally stops with these people? Or do you think that there are other people in charge? Or do you think there are people behind the scenes? Do you think there are higher powers. I don't know, you tell me. But I would say it's a very common belief that the people in power, quote unquote in power, in our governments aren't the final arbiters or don't truly represent the ultimate top of the pyramid. Whereas in Russia, it's unambiguous. It's Putin. That's what I'm saying. The executioner as social mystery. The figure of the executioner is, for Joseph de Maistre, one of the most revealing symbols in all of political philosophy. He stands at the intersection of necessity and horror. Order requires the ultimate sanction, yet no purely rational or humanitarian account of politics can fully accommodate that requirement. The executioner does not merely punish, he consecrates the boundary between the permissible and the forbidden. If you think of the executioner, you see the foundation of the order itself. You come face to face with the force required to keep this government in place. The ultimate coercion, the social necessity, the sacred horror. And you come up against the limits of rationalism. Now, of course, many of you will be screaming at the screen, but our sophisticated modern democracies have banned death by hanging. You can't be executed anymore. Well, okay, but there is still the use of force as the ultimate arbiter in kind. Now it's a prison cell. Well, now it's kind of other symbolic forms. But the basic point that de Maistre is making is not altered by the fact that the death penalty has been abolished in this country, as an example. This is just a further obscuring of the true mechanism at play. And if you don't believe me, just take a little look at what happens when social order actually breaks down. The example I always used to go back to was back in 2010, 2011 sort of time. There were riots in London. I remember a few buildings were set on fire and people just started looting, stealing TVs and things. And in fact, I'll never forget it. One of my favorite images of all time is that in the middle of all this chaos where people were, you know, kicking in windows, walking down the street with bags full of you know, electronic goods and TVs and things. There was this one chap who stole a massive bag of Tesco stripy basmati rice, and he posed for the camera with it, with a big bag of basmati rice. And it was just a funny thing because all of the other people were stealing like expensive products, and he stole a bag of rice that probably cost a tenner. So anyway, I find it amusing. The point is, how long did it take for the men with the big helmets and the big shields and the truncheons to come out? Hour at most, they were there. And force was used to reimpose order. We saw many examples of it during the short-lived but eventful reign of Keir Starmer, where in one of the great ironies is that Keir Starmer spent most of his time in power repeating the line, the full force of the law, the full force of the law, but then not applying that law in an equal way, such that he became known as quote unquote two-tier Keir. And in one of the most naked examples of what I might call the Schmittian exception, or what de Maistre would talk about, the absolute principle of the sovereign. During the Southport so-called riots, a few people kicked a few bins over, essentially is what happened. he introduced turbo courts, which bypassed the usual waiting lists and times and procedures to basically speed through putting these people in jail in the space of a week, i.e., you know, there was the full charging by the police, sentencing by the judge, and into jail by the end of the week. A purely Schmittian exercise of absolute power by the British government that, regardless of where you are on this issue, maybe you agree with them, maybe you disagree with them, shows what De Maistre is saying. You've done away with the idea of the king being in charge, but you have not done away with how power actually functions. And in the end, force was the mechanism to come back to the executioner. The modern day version of the executioner is what we see, is that what we see, the men in the masks and the big truncheons. Tradition has accumulated intelligence, according to De Maistre. He says, established institutions embody a kind of collective intelligence superior to the abstract schemes of individual philosophers. What has lasted has usually lasted for good reasons, reasons that pure reason is characteristically slow to recognize and quicker still to destroy, reasons that no single person can articulate. We just kind of have to take them on faith. What's the reason that? Well, just because. It's always been there. And we like it that, like we like it in that way. Now, this refusal to engage in abstract reasoning or to try to play the game of the rationalist, as I said earlier, is frustrating. No doubt frustrating to intellectuals or people who believe that they can rationally plan things. And yet, we find many great thinkers in history thinking in this way. This is basically the same argument that Michael Oakeshott made many years later. We've seen similar arguments from numerous of the great thinkers that I have covered so far. It's, again, Chesterton's fence. What is that fence there for? We don't know. Well, let's take it down then. Well, we don't know why it's there. It might be there for a really good reason, but we don't know what it is. But it's always been there, so let's just leave it alone. This rankles with modern sensibility. To go back to last week, it rankles with what Alul called technique. The drive for efficiency, the drive for rationality and calculation in all things. We just kind of like it there. I don't know what the reason is, but let's not change it. He says that there is a sense of the sacred in monarchy. Kingship derives its force from a sacred aura and from historical continuity. Once the kind of chair, once the throne is reduced to a mere office, justified by utility or justified by popular approval, vote, it loses that majesty. And that majesty in itself makes obedience feel natural rather than coerced. Even the most chaotic historical events carry meaning. And De Maistre saw providence in history, in grand old Christian tradition, really, that saw providence in history. De Maistre read the French Revolution as a divine punishment and purification of a regime that had gone wrong. The Bourbon monarchy had gone wrong. Shades, echoes, you could say, or precursor to arguments that Thomas Carlyle made in his book, The French Revolution, another of the great thinkers I've looked at. It is a terrible but purposeful correction of a society that had rebelled against legitimate authority. He's saying that the fact that the French Revolution was bloody and horrible and actually ended up producing its own kind of tyranny was a kind of punishment from God. And finally, De Maistre talks about the limits of written constitutions. No society can be held together by a written document alone. Constitutions engineered without deep roots in custom, religion, and historical loyalty remain perpetually fragile. Real constitutions are written in the heart and the habits of the people. A specific people, the French people, for example, not on parchment. Just to look at this little diagram a little more closely, you can see there's these axes here of high formalism and low formalism, low flexibility and high flexibility. And if you have a look at the high flexibility and the high formalism, you get a hybrid tension, legalism with social gaps. If you get the low formalism with the high flexibility, you get organic stability, durable social roots. If you have low flexibility and low formalism, you get a living constitution, custom, religion, loyalty, and in the top left, engineered constitution, rational design is codified. And for De Maistre, that is the kind of worst of all worlds. It's the high formalism with the low flexibility. And the legacy of De Maistre as a counter-revolutionary, he presents a coherent and formidable challenge to liberal political philosophy. Authority precedes consent. Reason cannot ground order. Violence haunts every foundation, whether or not you like it or not. And only tradition, religion, and sacred majesty can sustain a durable polity. And you can have a look at some of his books and things there as well. So that is De Maistre in a nutshell. You can see I've kind of chosen for my older thinkers a kind of trinity: Filmer, Hobbes, and De Maistre. Three slightly different arguments for absolute monarchy. I think De Maistre is really interesting to look at because he prefigures the thought of Carl Schmitt very well. And because despite his, what some people might think of as some of his idealism in thinking about providence and religion and things like that, in a strange way, he's also a very realist thinker, right? The fact that he says, like, you can't hide from violence. The fact that he's very realist about how power operates, for example, and what the sovereign is. Makes him a thinker of great interest, and the fact that he's got absolutely no time for liberal ideas or Enlightenment ideas also makes him extremely interesting. Pick up a course at the academic agency. This tea's probably gone cold now. Pick up a mug. And I'll catch you all tomorrow for the last in my kind of pro-monarchy series here, or thinkers who supported monarchy, and that is Hans Hermann Hoppe. Will make a lot of people happy, so I'll be returning to Hoppe tomorrow. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.